Hello, welcome to the 8123 podcast. We are in our new hangout zone, 8123 recording studios in Arizona.
Yep.
And we have a new series coming your way where we are breaking down the ins and outs of every single one of our albums. And up first, we have our 2008
debut album,
Can't Stop, Won't Stop. So let's kind of begin just with what was happening right before this time, right before the release, before the recording. What was going on in the band?
Well, I think it was, the way I remember it, it was kind of like right before the Neon thing was about to explode. So, like, Boys Like Girls had put the record out maybe the year before, and it was just starting to pick up right before we were about to record. Metro Station had just started to kind of, like, chain reaction side, like, 500 cap, 400 cap spots, like, selling it out. Forever Sick as Kids had just had a huge deal. Like, remember
yeah.
Like, everyone's like, they got, like, $1 million deal.
Yeah. And they bought two vans, and they put PlayStations in them and big screen TVs, and all the bands were talking about that.
Yeah. But it was, like, this bubbling, like, All Time Low wasn't what they are now, but it was, like, about to happen. It was, like, literally, like, this, you could feel this bubble that was about to explode, and we're the bottom of that bubble.
Yeah, we are not generation, but I guess generation of bands, which could be like because we came out 2 years later or something. But, you know, we were the one generation behind all those bands.
Yes.
So we saw their success as we were beginning our band.
Yeah.
You know, I guess those are all things that we'll talk about as we go on with this record, but it really was the perfect time to make the album that we made.
Yeah.
And as we'll talk about in other episodes, other albums, that wasn't the case, where we didn't make the right album for the right time.
Mm-hmm.
Where in this case, this is maybe the only time in the history of our band where we made the right album for the right time, kind of on purpose. So I guess before we get into that, a little backstory on our band at that time going into the writing and stuff. So for me, the thing that I had written down in my notes when I was thinking about this was, one of the key elements of this record is that this is John's first time, pretty much, where he has to take on the full responsibility of writing songs.
Yeah.
Ryan Osterman, our original guitarist, did a lot of writing to help us with the first EPs and stuff.
Well, he was the main writer.
Yeah. And we wrote more as a band, right? So we wrote more, get in a room together. He starts playing a guitar part. We start playing along and write a song all together. And then John writes the vocals on top of it. Where that ended up not being the case as we go on as a band, where the idea comes from John. It's recorded very, very simply, and then we bring it to the band and we make the song become what it is. And Can't Stop was the beginning of that happening.
Yeah,
for the first time.
Like, This Is the End and
Into Your Arms.
Into Your Arms. All those two particularly, I remember like getting demos and he would do this auto tune thing. There's a sound that to those early, up until even Black and White, there's this sound of his demos. Guitar. I don't think there would ever be drum. No, there'd be drums.
There'd be drums.
Yeah, but there'd be heavy auto-tune. There'd be like
a chorusy effect on the guitars.
Yeah.
And an auto-tune on the vocals. And kind of. And they all had the same kind of a
sound. It's funny. It's kind of like the roomy, like the bedroom emo rock thing that's happening right now.
Yeah.
Kind of fits in that realm.
Yeah.
Where it's like super simple, like we always call them bonehead chords, but like power chords. Yeah. And like this, yeah, like heavy auto-tune thing, but gave it this feeling that was really cool and like put like a lot of heart and feeling into the demos. And whereas like a This Is the End, if you listen to the demo, it brings this emotion that maybe the song didn't even have.
Yeah.
But yeah, those early demos were interesting.
Yeah.
But for you and me, we had just finished high school. Like, we're literally writing the record and going to high school.
Yeah.
Like, girls, like, we had our fall break. We drove out to Texas to play a show with Forever Six's Kids. And in the back of the van, John's writing Girls Do What They Want. We're rushing back after that to make sure that we can finish high school. So we go there on like Thursday, we're back by Tuesday. Yeah. And go to school on Wednesday. So like it's this weird, like we're definitely just still kids.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah.
There is a element of we have no idea what the fuck's about to happen to us.
Yeah. But things are happening and they're kind of happening fast. Our EP before this, you know, was selling tons of copies. All of a sudden we're playing shows with bands and we're bringing the majority of the people. Mm-hmm. And you can just feel this, like at the record label, you know, we had just signed to Fearless, and you can feel that like we're their focus.
Yeah.
And it was really exciting. It was awesome.
But yeah, there's this element though that is different. It like I remember because going to California for that trip, for recording, it was our first time leaving home, like, mm-hmm. and going to live somewhere. It would be like us moving to go to college, and yeah. like where, you know, John and Jared went to college at ASU, whatever, they kind of had that, but yeah. this is like, we're leaving the state, like, we're, yeah. our parents aren't around, like, we're fucking figuring it out, yeah. like, and so there's this, like, freedom that we get,
yeah,
that you know, it's kind of early for people, you know, like
yeah. I mean, we were not even 18.
I turned 18 when yeah, you know, while making the album.
Yeah, first day of recording the drums for the record was my 18th birthday.
So, so crazy.
Which was the same Black and White was my 20th birthday.
Oh wow.
Yeah. All right. So the next category here, key outside collaborator. So I guess we can briefly talk about the collaborations that we did do on the record. So Justin Richards of Brighton, mm-hmm. And then he went on to be in a Rocket to the Moon. He came out to Arizona and wrote with us for a little bit, and we wrote Whoever She Is and I Must Be Dreaming with him.
Yeah.
And that was pretty early on in the writing. I mean, we had girls with... I guess it was kind of towards the end, actually. So that was the only other outside collaborator on the record besides Matt Squire,
mm-hmm.
who I picked as the most important person on the record outside of the band.
Oh, for sure.
So to set a little bit of a picture on him, I don't know if people would know, but so he had produced and recorded every band that we were talking about before. Boys Like Girls, Panic of the Disco,
All Time Cute Low.
As We Aim For, All Time Low, all the biggest bands in the scene. So it was the most obvious thing in the world that that's who we wanted to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we didn't know anything about working with a producer, and he was hard on us. and he made the record a lot better.
Oh yeah, I mean he was particularly hard on you.
Yeah,
I remember there was in pre-production, you doing this shit that was above where you were at that point, but made you good, and you're just sitting there and you're doing these it's just little fills and stuff and drum grooves that
he was just very I would say, well, first off, it was recording drums for an album, you're kind of expected to play the whole song all the way through, and to do it right there, and you're in a different room from other people, and it's the first thing that's recorded. Other parts on the record, you're doing your bass, you're doing guitar, you're doing vocals.
Collaboration, yeah.
It's a collaboration. It's a, you're sitting there and it's like, all right, let's just do the intro.
Yeah.
And you sit there and you guys kind of figure out what the part is.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just work on, and your brain only has to think about 10 seconds or something. Yeah. And then you can forget about it and never, maybe never play it again for 10 years.
Right? Yeah.
Which happened for a couple songs.
It's just hilarious.
Where doing drums, you have to know the entire song all at once.
Mm-hmm.
So your brain has to be thinking about, you're freaking out about this one part in the bridge that's kind of hard to play.
Coming, so you're...
While you're playing the verse and whatever. Yeah. And he was just very particular about things.
Mm-hmm.
Where I could have done some fill that would have felt more comfortable for me and it would have been easy to play and probably wouldn't have changed the song too much, but we were very, very particular about every single hit.
Yeah. Well, and especially because you come from... Your drumming style is I'll call it the Dave Grohl style, where it's it's not the most complicated stuff, but it's, you hit the shit out of it and you're that's what's awesome about it. And this is he wants you to play you're playing with Prince.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which is just a complete opposite aspect. And that was a reference tons.
Yeah.
And you definitely know Prince songs, but you're not.
Yeah.
You're not a Prince head, you know what I mean? And all those drums are drum machines too.
Yeah.
So it's just it was a totally different thing, but ended up making stuff really exciting.
Yeah.
For sure. And that was a huge, huge thing too that Matt brought, was this we had some of that, but the electronic with the reel and meshing things.
Yeah.
That it set the bar early for what we were going to do forever.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I would say one of the biggest things that he did, which we'll get into when we talk about some of these songs in particular, but how he challenged other people like Jared was to throw these instruments at him that he had never played before: a lap steel, pedal steel, an accordion, a mandolin, things like that, and having us incorporate these non-traditional rock music instruments, we would have been okay with making more of a basic album.
Mm-hmm.
We would have been okay with kind of doing what Cues We Aim For other bands had done, where it was just drums, bass, and guitar, piano maybe or something, and acoustic. And he pushed us to be a different kind of band.
But I've been thinking about this. I think it's because he thought we were maybe more technically good than we were.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the only person that was actually good at their instrument was Jared.
Yeah.
Like you're good. You're solid. I was a terrible bass player at the time. Kenny could barely play guitar.
Yeah.
like John, this... sang for 6 months.
Yeah.
Like, we're not, a solid band. But this is kind of the leftover of Ryan. Ryan was really fucking good.
Yeah.
So he would layer guitars and all these things.
And all the songs that Squire was hearing of us before that
Ryan's songs.
Ryan's songs.
Yeah. Yes. So, and probably the ones that he didn't particularly even like were the ones that we wrote without Ryan.
Yeah.
So it's our skill level wasn't to where it was besides Jared.
Yeah.
But we were just hanging in there, and he pushed us, and we were able to do it.
You know? We were, and that's it. It was hard, but we did it. You know.
Yeah.
We played everything, and you know. Yeah, so that was, you know, he had a major influence and help on the record, and, you know, we couldn't have done it.
Yeah.
Without him, for sure. All right, so now getting into a little bit after the record's out and stuff, and I'm sure we're gonna have the same answer for this one, for this album, and that is the defining show or tour.
Tour, we're going to say the same thing. Show, I think, will be different.
So I guess I took that as one question, like defining show or tour. So if you have a particular
show. I have a show.
Okay. Well, let's do the tour first. So
3, 2, 1. Boys Like Girls tour.
And this is something we don't have to spend too much time on. We've talked about it a bunch, but... The day the album came out was the first day of a tour. We opened for Boys Like Girls, Good Charlotte, and Metro Station. It was the peak of this neon scene that we were a part of. It was playing to 3,000 to 12,000 people a night, crazy, in some our arenas and just big shows. And it was a defining factor in us having success as a band, and it was incredible. Everybody else on the tour was kind of like established in some way. Boys Like Girls and Good Charlotte were definitely established. Metro Station had a huge hit song, and we were like the band that no one had heard of, but we were approachable. We would hang out with everybody after the shows, and we just had a new record out, and it just worked on every level.
Yeah, well, I mean, yes. But I think the first show, and I recently, so the first show was in Chicago. It was the day the record came out. And the first show in particular, I recently have watched the set of that. I haven't recorded. And it made me realize that, well, one, we were ready. And also, it made me realize that, like, we were kind of confident. Like, we're like, we went out there and we're like, we're gonna fucking do this.
Yeah.
And we did. Watching it, it's like, it doesn't seem like a band that just went from playing 200 people only to 6,000. It was like, no, we're ready, and like, it, here, we're gonna show you what we have. And
yeah, well, we kind of, I think, had a little bit of this, like, I don't know what you'd, like, a sports mentality to it, where it was like, we're gonna go out there and win or something, even though, like, music...
you don't win.
you don't win. There's no like, oh, we're the most intense. But like, we kind of had that attitude. We're like,
I mean, we still have that attitude.
Yeah.
Like, there is like, there's not a competition with one specific band or anything, but
it's just with ourselves almost.
Yes. Yeah. It's like, we want to do better. We want to be better. We want to like, and it's always this thing. And that's why, like you're saying, that's run through it the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, even to the moment, the very beginning of the band, when we wrote our first song, showed Tim, he was like, yeah, it's not that good. Next, and then, like, we're like, okay, well, then we want to be much better. And then a day later, we show him Daisy.
Yeah.
And it was like, everything changed.
Yep.
Like, so there is a element of the competition that has been with us. There's moments that I'm sure we'll talk about later that we... threw that out the window, but
yeah. All right, so you have a show real quick that you think was like,
oh, the Chicago. It was like because I remember walking off and be like, we fucking did it.
Yeah.
Like, ever, like, we walk out and all these people don't know who the fuck we are, and I'm watching the video and they're in.
Yeah,
instantly we walk out and they're like, who's this thing? And we had them like right away. in the whole show. It's like people are jumping to songs they don't know.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? I would never have done that. Yeah. I would never have been in the crowd as some band and like be like, yeah. But I don't know. It was just watching it again. I was like, oh, okay, we had it. Yeah. And the whole tour, we had it. Yeah. There wasn't, like, I don't remember a single show on that tour bad, where we were like, oh, man, like, we didn't win.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
Yeah. All right. Most popular song on the album. My answer to this maybe would have been different a week ago. But after the live stream show, it became very clear to me, Into Your Arms.
Yeah. Yes. I'm going to say that one, and I'm going to say Girls Do What They Want. But I'm going to go with Into Your Arms also, because seeing the reaction after, and people be like, this was the first song I knew. Like, I'm going through the comments, and literally everyone's saying that.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't realize
the
impact that had. But, like, even Lupe, first time he ever heard it is because he had a BlackBerry, and the music video was on the BlackBerry.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, okay, that, like, definitely went farther out than I even realized.
Yeah.
And I guess it means more to people than I thought. I thought it was kind of like, I don't know, like,
yeah, just like a down the middle.
Oh, that was your big song or whatever. Yeah. And like people don't want to hear it. And I think I get too in my head about that stuff, where it's like, because like if I go to a Jimmy Eat World show, like I don't really want to hear the middle.
Yeah.
So it's like, and it's not even close to that, but there is something about singles that is interesting to me.
Yeah.
But yeah.
In your arms.
But
fan favorite song.
Okay. Fan favorite is not either of those.
I have Will I'll Be.
I put I Must Be Dreaming.
That's I guess.
I think more people would be more pumped to hear I Must Be Dreaming, I think.
Yeah. I think my factor was like this emotional factor. I think Will I'll Be means a lot to people. It's meant a lot at our shows. It's ended the night very well. Definitely people wouldn't be going as nuts to it as I Must Be Dreaming.
I'm just thinking about whenever we've gone into I Must Be Dreaming at a show, just in the middle of the set, it's always like, there's always a reaction of like, oh, they're playing that one. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, I wanted to put Will Be, but I deleted it.
So the band dynamic during this era, the making it, the recording of it, and then afterwards, once it came out. So there was definitely a shift. Maybe a 6 months to a year after the album came out. I would say before the album came out, while we're writing it, recording it, first tour, I mean, it was just pure excitement. No one really knew what they were doing. A lot of the dynamics, like, still kind of the same when you go back and, like, look at the video. You know, it's like, I was still doing kind of what I do now, and, like, John was still kind of doing what he does. Like, the jokes were kind of the same. The little nitpickiness, people getting in dumb little arguments every once in a while. But, like, generally, like, great, you know.
Yeah, I wrote down, like, everyone was on the same team.
Yeah.
Like, everyone was in it fully and just excited.
Yeah.
And there was also this, like, at home, like, coming home, like, all of our friends were like, holy shit, our best buds are on tour. And then you come home and be like this, like,
yeah,
like release of like, oh shit. It was like this, like, all around what's happening.
Yeah.
But
then, okay, so this is something that just popped in my head that I had kind of forgotten about, because we haven't really ever had too many like troubling times in the band. Like, Generally, we've all gotten along very well and continue to be best friends and stuff. But there was this thing, probably, I'm going to say, around, like, the AP tour. So, like, maybe halfway through this album cycle, where there was this, some tension probably coming from different relationships all of us were in. There was just these little, so everybody kind of had like their first, well, except for John. he wasn't in a relationship at all, but everybody else was, and it was kind of like their high school relationship.
Yeah.
And that had to evolve from being a high school relationship into being like, now we're in a band and we're playing shows and there's people that want to talk to us and meet us. And not that we were doing bad things or anything like that, but there, it was just like navigating that. And then...
Well, and being gone.
And yeah, and being gone.
I mean, that was the biggest thing.
Yeah.
It's just being gone.
Yeah.
For like the entire year.
Yeah.
For years.
Yeah. But then there was like the girlfriends were friends and then they weren't friends and then there was all that stuff which that like you had, like forget about.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But it was definitely like made things a little tense, and obviously like whenever we would then get back on tour and be hanging out, like nothing ever was like affected within us as band members or as friends, but I'm not going to say that it didn't make things a little weird.
Oh, yeah. And it's hard for me to remember. But, yeah, I think it was things that, like, anyone that, like, went away to college and kept their high school, it would have been the same shit.
Yes,
for sure. Just in a different scenario. But, like... there was also, just like young shit. Like,
yeah, but there was all these things that we were trying to figure out. Like we were on a bus for the first time, right? So you could bring your girlfriend out on tour.
Oh yeah.
And it was like, well, how many days can they come, right? Because it's like, you know, everybody gets along or whatever, but there's this thing where it's like you're kind of like invading the space of everyone.
Yeah.
And there's five of us, or you know, four of us that have girlfriends. If everybody comes out for 4 days, that's
the whole tour.
That's the whole tour.
Yeah.
Oh
fuck! I don't even. It's so funny. I don't even remember. But like I do now that you're saying it.
So it's like all like we were dealing with that for the first time.
Yeah.
And it was also we were at this like stage in our life where like the band was everything and anything.
Yeah.
So it was like
they're gonna crumble no matter what. Like there's no way that.
There's no way you're making it
out of it.
I was not putting anybody else first besides the band.
Yeah.
You know? And that would not be my opinion now.
Yeah.
But that was then.
Yeah.
That was challenging.
Yes. For sure. Yeah, it was... That... Now that you're... It was hard. Like... Well, because then, like, it's just... You don't know what the fuck to do.
Yeah.
You have no idea, you're like, how do you navigate that? Like, how are you supposed to, like, yeah, I want to be home, but you don't really want to be home, so you're lying.
Yeah.
But, like, you're like, well, this is just what I have to do.
Yeah.
And, it was...
You're 18. You're wanting to live out your dreams.
Well, the dream is happening. Yeah. Like, literally, like, the craziest time of our band is happening in the moment, and there's also this other thing that like you the relationship, like I mean there's so many friends that I had at the time that I don't talk to anymore. It's because you just go, and then it's this long period of time. If you don't talk to someone for 8 months, you can't just come back into that relationship. You can't just come back and be like, yo dude, what's up? Like everything you have grown so distant from that it's impossible. So that's why the band gets stronger.
Yeah.
You know, like us
because you're all going through the same thing.
Yeah. You know? And then when things outside of it come in, then it's like the problem is there then.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And, it, you know, this is a different, also different time of touring. There's no FaceTime. We're in the UK for almost a month, and you don't have phone service.
Yeah.
You, like, borrow a phone from the venue to, like, I don't even call remember. Or get on your laptop and yeah. use Skype, but the internet sucks.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's hard.
Yeah. Yeah, relationships were doomed.
Yeah. All right, getting back into the music a little bit. Bridge song. So this means what is the song that maybe bridged the gap between this record and Black and White, the next album?
I have two. In Your Arms and Wallaby. So your other ones earlier.
Yeah.
But probably more In Your Arms than anything. Because... kind of going back to recording, the first time we had meetings with Warner was when we were recording.
Yeah.
Can't Stop. And they were coming to the studio, and that was the song for them. Yeah. They're like, you guys are going to be the next Goo Goo Dolls.
Yeah.
You're the next Tom Petty. And we're like, whoa, Tom Petty? That's when it got plugged in.
And we'll spend a bunch of time on that. I'm sure a bunch of the next episode will be about
Tom Petty. Say Tom Petty 100 times. They were like that song. Yeah. And that's like their input got Fearless into thinking that was the song and everything. Yeah, we'll get into that. Yeah. But I would say those two, just because of the elements that are there, yeah. like, production-wise.
So I was going to say I must be dreaming for the same reasons.
Yeah.
It's obviously a little more energetic than what Black and White ended up being,
mm-hmm.
but it was how do we incorporate these organic instrumentation into pop rock.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Definitely. All right. Most influential artist or album that influenced the band for this album. I have an interesting one.
I have one too.
I'm very curious where you're gonna go first. I don't have a specific one, but I have something that is very unique to this album.
Okay.
But you can go first.
I'm gonna say Brighton. And I didn't think about that until you had this question written down. And I was like, well, what really was it? And it was for sure 100% them.
Yeah.
Like everything pre can't stop and before, they were the influence.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I'm curious what you're going to say.
I mean, I have written down Ivory, Brighton, big influences, but then I have the only time in our career where we were influenced and aspiring in a small way to current bands in the scene that we are working with. So Cues We Aim For, Boys Like Girls, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Never in the history of our band after that were things like that ever even mentioned or listened to much or anything, but I think on this one it kind of was because we were wanting to be a contemporary band in this scene.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And I think that is a unique thing to this album.
The album. Yeah. Well, I mean, even think about a song like You Left Me, the reference that ended up being like Metro Station.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, which I still, that record's good.
Yeah,
that record's really good.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a reference.
Yeah.
You know? You're right. And I never really thought about that, but totally. I mean, we were just trying to fit in with what was happening and the things that we were surrounded by.
And then we just so happened to kind of do our own twist on it and not get caught in that, which then allowed us to be a band now.
Yeah, so. For sure.
All right. Song you would cut from the album if you had to cut one song. This one for me wouldn't have been my choice maybe until after 8123 Fest when we played the album in full. For me, it would be Time to Go. And I think my obvious answer would have been You Left Me, which I'm thinking maybe that's what you picked.
I did. But it's because I like the demo way more. Yeah. I think the production we put on it put it in the time period.
Yeah.
Where there is you don't want to say that, but like timeless thing, like a Will Be, like it doesn't fit in that period. It has things that are like, well, this could have been kind of whenever. You Left Me, because of the production, specifically put it in 2008. Yeah.
So I agree with that, but I think melodically and lyrically it's a better song than Time to Go.
Yeah. I mean, Time to Go is just Island from the starting line.
Yeah. To me, Time to Go is just...
But a worse version.
It's us doing what we were doing at the time, but it's just not on the caliber of the other songs. It sounds like it should have been the second best, third best song on the EP before it.
I agree. And which is so funny, because in my head at the time, it was like, well, you can... It's funny how you can convince yourself that something is important. Like, the whole time we were recording, Time to Go was the first song on the album. Up until...
After it was pretty much done, yeah.
I mean, Bob from Fearless was like, no, Everything I Asked For is the first song. And we're like, okay. But, so it was... Because it was the statement, the first song... It had more in my head of being cooler or better or whatever. But looking back and where it's played, it's so that.
Yeah.
And you can't... it's hard to like not think about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I can agree with that one too.
Yeah.
For sure. No one's scratching the door. Hey, play Time to Go! Yeah. Why don't you play Time to Go?
And then, lastly, how does this record fit within our career, within our catalog, within what we do as a band? To me, it fits nicely. I think it holds up.
It's now. It's grown on me as time.
I think it's up there for me with what our best work. I think that it's a really good record. And the one thing you can go first, and then I have something kind of to counter that, I guess, a little bit.
I touched on this earlier, but I think Everything I Asked For, like, weirdly is this opening it's our first stab at like the things that we do now.
Yeah.
It's a
precursor to Am I Pretty, English Girls, Bad Behavior, and
Sticky. Dude, yeah. Like, I mean, it's grooves with drum loops, with like Third Eye Blind, like riffs, like, it is the first baby step of the things that we're still excited about now.
Yeah.
I mean, production is over the top, whatever. But I mean, that song, breaking it down what it is the first step of the things that we still love to do right now.
And which we didn't do for a long time.
Which we didn't do forever.
For 7 years after.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's groovy. Yeah. It's like, like, it's so funny. I mean, I'm always talking about videos, but I just have, like, I have hard drives and hard drives of stuff. And so Jared was talking about, English Girls being like the first groove song, and I was like, well, no, it wasn't. It was Everything Asked For.
Yeah.
So
and then, okay, so my counterpoint
on why it's good?
No. not why it's good. I guess where it fits in with our catalog. So the record sold a fuck ton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, over 100,000 copies, 150,000, 160,000 copies of the record.
Jesus.
Lots of people had it. We had mainstream success at the time. In Charms was on the radio a little bit. We were on MTV. With that being said, though, if we don't play a song from this album in our set, we'll get it. It is not a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's an interesting dynamic, and that says a lot about what we'll talk about later on in other episodes.
Yeah, I've never really thought about it like that. But I mean, you're right.
Not a lot of bands that can say their breakout album.
Well, their biggest yeah. album.
You know, so.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a story to break down later.
Yeah. So, to be continued. Black and White will be up next, and we'll be talking about how our career took a turn in a very different way. So,
yeah.
Thank you all for listening, for watching. Good to be back with the podcast.
Yeah. See you.